Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives
to the outer reaches of Xenos infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and as ever, I'm joined by the wonderful Steve. How are you, Steve?
I'm very good, mate. Doing good.
Good stuff. And today we are talking all about the third player of this wonderful war game of ours, and we're going to be talking about terrain.
Yep, tables and terrain.
Tables and terrain and scenery and all that jazz. So we wanted to talk about this. We mentioned about it in a previous episode, and I think themed boards and good terrain can make or break Warhammer. Now, we've all seen people playing with kind of grey painted armies unpainted armies. We've also seen people play with grey painted armies, but that's another story. So unpainted armies fine on like a tabletop with a, you know, on a table with no mat and some books as cover or whatever. That's fine, you know, everyone starts there, but I suppose as you start to, you know, paint your armies, get ready, and then you suddenly you're playing with painted armies on a beautiful map, but using unpainted terrain or just like a mishmash of terrain. And I think that can kind of almost, like, if you want to get really immersed into to your game, especially from the kind of narrative perspective, then the terrain can really help make your games look amazing, but also help support that narrative. So rather than it just being an objective counter, you know, a little 40 mil base with a number one painted on it, it could be a drop pod of supplies for your Talon unit, which is something Steve's done, you know, 3D printed his own terrain objective markers rather. Or it could even be a model. It could be a downed pilot or something like that. And suddenly that really helps bring your games to life. So what we're going to be talking about today is how you can use terrain to kind of help you forge that narrative. And also we're going to be designing a couple of tables on the fly. So mistakes may be made, and it's going to be a very much a kind of iterative process. We're going to be talking about it, saying what could work, what might not work. And ultimately, I'll be building one of the terrain tables. And one of those has been suggested by a listener.
Yeah, which is great.
So Steve, so before we begin, what are your thoughts on terrain overall?
So there's two sides to terrain. There's terrain that builds the story. There's terrain that makes it narratively fun, the objectives you're fighting over. And I'm all over that. But also what we've definitely seen in 9th edition is you need plenty of terrain, and it needs line of sight blocking. We need to make that work. Otherwise, it's just a who gets first turn and shoots the other player off. So I think it's kind of gone from being, you know, nice to have to a must have, and the level which you take it, that's up to you. But I think for me, it's only been a boon for me that, you know, my tables are usually pretty busy, so I think they're now seen as a bit more kind of the norm, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think if you are playing match play and you want to have some L-shaped ruins and hills that are kind of stepped hills, like, we're not trying to take away from that. We're, you know, and I know I may have sounded dismissive when I'm talking about, you know, grey armies and using books as cover, like, whatever. There's a time and a space for that, but that's kind of not what, that's not how you and I hobby, is it, Steve?
No.
And that's not to say that's wrong. That's just kind of how we would prefer to kind of play on a kind of narratively driven battlescape where we can tell that story. So please, this isn't kind of hobby snobbery, but if you do want to take your terrain sort of up a narrative notch, then hopefully this episode will kind of give you some ideas. So Steve, if you were going about designing a table, let's say, in designing a set of terrain, is there a kind of specific process that you would have in mind? Obviously, you have just spoken about quite lengthily about narrative process with Lee in a previous episode, but if we were to just kind of transition that over from an army to a terrain set, what would be at the forefront of your mind?
So for me, it's about what's the space, what's this segment of the universe that we're going to fight in. So, you know, where is it? What type of planet is it? You know, we've got some imperial designations. You know, is it Hive world, is it a death world, what type of world is it? Because we want to bring some of those cool elements into it. I think for me, and I have made fixed terrain in the past, but I want it to be flexible. I want it to be able that I can change the layout, change the options Otherwise, you just end up with these kind of places on the board that, like any computer game, you know, this is always a great place to snipe, or this is always the way you have to run through a hail of fire to get from one side to the other. And I think for me, as much as fixed terrain can give you a probably more detailed table, I still want to play lots of games. And I think then the third thing is that how am I going to think about what elements of my armies do I want reflected in this table? Now, I don't have a table for every army I've made. I have quite a lot of tables, but I don't have that specifically. I think what I'm sort of thinking about is that if you're going to have some wrecks on a battlefield and I'm going to play my mate with his orcs, then if I'm going to add some wrecks, then add some orcs or add some Talarn if I'm going to be doing that. So there's kind of a whole kind of checklist that I want to go through. And at the end of it, it's like, can I do all those things? Is it achievable in time and budget? And then you kind of go, yep, and it's like, let's get started. So I think for me, that's and the other thing I really really like to use is Pinterest. So I set up a board and I'll just go and scour the internet for images, and this can be everything from existing models, which I maybe want to add, to color schemes, to, you know, cloud patterns, to foliage, to movie bits and pieces that I like. But it gets together collection of images in an easy to find place where you can just kind of look at it and you can get a sense of, you know, real kind of mood board of what you're looking to do. And I think for me, that's where you can start to connect images with either existing kits, with stuff you're going to scratch build, stuff you're going to 3D print. And I think that's kind of when the kickoff point for me is, that it's like, yes, it does everything on my checklist. Yes, I can get these elements together. You know, you might be lucky and find one picture that sells it all, but that probably isn't true. But I've got this selection of images now which visualize that list. Now I can start collecting.
Yeah, and that virtual scrapbooking, which essentially Pinterest helps you do or kind of enables you to do, is a fantastic way to kind of collate a lot of different disparate ideas from different sources. I'll often be on a dog walk and I'll see these like patterns of in the floor, you know, how a Grelin Earth kind of crackles. I'll see some kind of like, just where like a Grelin Earth has crackled in like a mossy area, and I was just like, oh, that looks really good, like that should be on a wargaming base and I should take a picture of it and put it on a Pinterest, and I never do. I can, having seen some of your Pinterest essentially mood boards, I think it would really help kind of collate some disparate ideas together.
Yeah, and also, you know, if you're going to build it with a friend, or you're going to have a friend that's going to be gaming on it, to be able to share that kind of process means that they can come along with you. And I recently did one where I shared the board and my mate chucked in lots of stuff, and before we knew it, we had loads. And then we could have a conversation and say, yeah, that's not right, but that is a good find. And you end up with this kind of a refined set of images where you kind of go, well, that's what we're shooting for. Now, obviously, with all these things, you know, you've probably found some incredibly talented concept art for some computer game that never got made. And you look at it and it, you know, you'd have to be a professional model maker and spend 3 or 4 months solidly on it to produce it. But that's not what it's there for. It's not to say you have to do this. It's your inspiration. It's your aim point. It's like, well, we'll get towards that, but ultimately we're not going to make that, because that is a massive space station hanging over Earth. You know, we're going to make a corner of that, of one warehouse, but we're going to use those colors and we're going to use that company name, or we're going to use, so there's all sorts of things you can pull from it. And I think that's the real benefit.
Absolutely. And I think we're seeing in the certainly in the Crusade space a lot more rules that are specific to different types of terrain, different types of battlescape, where Games Workshop are kind of giving you these suggested rules to use. You know, we had previously during the kind of Crusade White Dwarf articles, the Flashpoint stuff, I think it was like a submerged city ruin, wasn't it? So it takes that, you know, this bucket loads of city ruins in the 41st millennium, but these ones were underwater, and it kind of represented this kind of Atlantis-esque, you know, sector mortalis that exists in the 41st millennium on this kind of flooded planet, where it just mixes things up and it allows you to take an existing trope and almost, I don't want to say a tired trope, but add a unique spin to it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with city fight boards. Like I'm, you know, I've got one in the back of my mind that I would want to do, but it is nice to be able to have like a slightly more unique thing.
And I think the nice thing about those rules is, although they are, yes, they are connected to a certain planet in a system, in a sector, but a hot desert world can be anywhere. There's more than one hot desert world. So like you say, I mean, there's some really cool rules about an overrun city that's full of booby traps. Well, suddenly moving around inside your city ruins, knowing that you have to roll a booby trap roll, suddenly they're not these go-to places when they might actually be booby trapped and blow up. So your interaction with the terrain is like, oh yeah, I'm not just going to run for cover, because if it blows up, then that's mortals for everyone around, you know. And you're going to go, and especially late game, and you've only got a few left, and do I want to get into cover, or do I want to hope they miss me? It's going to be 50-50. I don't know. So yeah, I think they're a great resource. And also I'd recommend to people is, you know, even if you're not looking to campaign in the Prior Nexus, for example, it doesn't matter. There's great rules in there that you can apply to one piece of scenery, for example, just because you've built it and it's cool. So yeah, they're really good.
So it's also worth looking at the rules for terrain and working out, as you're building a terrain piece, what kind of traits that you're going to give a certain terrain piece, especially if you're building it for like a club or a tournament, potentially even making notes. You know, I guess if it's for a club, you can write it on the bottom so that people can check it. And if it's for an event, you might want to make a little laminated sticky note or laminated note that sits underneath it, so, you know, and pokes out so that people can refer to it without picking up the actual bit of cover.
Yeah.
You know, let's discuss those terrain traits now, just so we can kind of have that in the back of our mind whilst we're discussing our boards. So you've got light cover. When an attack made with a ranged weapon wounds a model that is receiving the benefits of cover from this terrain feature, add one to the saving throw made against that attack. And so you've got things like ruins, craters, armored containers, barricades and pipes. And I guess this is like your basic stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got heavy cover. So when an attack made with a melee weapon wounds a model that is receiving the benefits of cover from this terrain feature, add one to the saving throw made against that attack, unless the model that the attack is allocated to made a charge move this turn. So essentially you've got things like, and again, that's more barricades, but that's like specifically kind of defensible barricades, which is slightly different because there's also, I don't want to use, that's a defensible with a small d, because there is something also called defensible terrain feature. So you've got things like defense lines at ruins, barricades, woods,
trenches,
things like that. So yeah, there's lots of different traits there. You've also got dense cover. So this is more like kind of woods and some levels of ruined walls. So we're not going to go through all the rules exactly, but it's just useful to kind of consider all the different ways in which you can have your terrain interact with models. You know, are they breachable, which affects infantry, beasts, and swarm units? Are they scalable? You know, can things go up and down them quite? You know, is it difficult ground? You know, are you going to remove movement? So is it like a bog or crater, things like that are filled with mud and stuff like that? Or is it maybe some sort of, it could even be flat. You know, if you're limited on space, there's nothing to say that you can't create quite a lot of flat-ish terrain and just say, this is a swamp that, you know, a sulfur swamp or whatever, so there's loads of sulfuric venting gases coming up from that, so it completely blocks line of sight. Yeah. You know, just suspend your disbelief slightly. You know, at the end of the day, you're playing a fantasy war game in the 41st millennium, science fiction fantasy war game in the 41st millennium. Like, you know, you could just say, all right, everything upwards around that kind of edge of the terrain piece is obscured, as if this is a kind of infinitely high terrain piece. You know, if you're, I don't know, starting out or, you know, maybe limited on space for storage, then you could totally do that. And you've even got things like inspiring as well. So whether that's like an imperial statue or like a elder shrine or something like that. So, you know, adding brave to units around it. There's all sorts of different things which you are worth considering when you're kind of throwing together your rule.
And also to say that, you know, these are layered, and that you can have, you know, light cover, inspiring, position. So, you know, it's, you don't have to pick just one of these things. They can
absolutely
be multiple.
Yeah, totally. They're like a big Venn diagram of terrain. So, Steve, what are you thinking? Did we have a suggestion from a listener?
We did. Tristan came up with the message on Twitter, I think it was. So it was great. And he was suggested a liberated world that's been liberated by the Tau. I think it was a market. What was after, Dan?
Yeah, I think from his kind of brief, it was essentially, I almost want to say like Mos Eisley, you know, like a Tau Mos Eisley, a real kind of cosmopolitan, you know, hodgepodge melting pot of cultures, of, you know, species out there in the 41st millennium. You know, some Tau, some kind of fruit buildings, different alien races, some human, you know, Tau fans. And so, yeah, I think it's a nice kind of hodgepodge of different cultures and almost quite like shantytown-esque, but not in a kind of impoverished way, but just in a kind of something has naturally progressed.
Yeah. And I think it's a fab idea. I think actually deciding whereabouts on the timeline it is going to be super key, because you would imagine that as it becomes more established and more Tau-like, then certain buildings will be knocked down and replaced, and it will become more and more clean and tidy and curvy buildings. So it's deciding where on the timeline, as you know, have you only just been invaded and everything's still burning, or is it in that process? And I think I'd like to pick something where it's in the process where a couple of buildings have become Tau as we expect, but actually there would be some other buildings there that make sense to make use of, but also maybe things like we'd want to deface or destroy some build so that we can remove iconography that might well inspire people to want to go back to being part of the Imperium. So I think that's where I'm going to say where we've got that. And that, like you said about the Mos Eisley, you're going to have a massive range of opportunities and things to draw from. I think it's probably needs to be a reasonably big table, although you could build it small and grow it. The market area. So I had a thought about that. And yes, you could definitely have a kind of bizarre market stalls. Obviously, that's going to make it quite close quarters fighting, and maybe that's what we want for the table, or we want part for the table. But when you say markets, it doesn't always have to be rugs and gourds. You know, it can be maybe it's shuttles, and
that's what I was just about to say. Maybe it's like a series of landing pads,
yeah,
and each almost like a central node, and it's got all these landing pads kind of coming off it, like a in spokes.
Yep.
And at the end of the spokes is a landing pad, and in the middle is where people come to bring their wares. So it means you could space the stuff out, and you could have like a concentrated area in the middle where people set up their stalls. And that could, you know, that could be the kind of rugs and gourds and hagglings, you know, where, you know, if you think of a bustling kind of market, you know, like you'd see in Indiana Jones or something, you know,
yep.
That's what everyone's thinking of. But I think that you could then just kind of space it out a little, space it out as in physical space, not science fiction space, but also science fiction space at the same time. You could space it out a little bit by having these kind of landing pads, and each landing pad would be different. You know, you could have, you know, is this an old Imperial setting where it is all just a series of Aquila landing pads, or is this more of an alien world that is acting as like a staging post for a Tau expansion and is just where lots of aliens and humans and Tau kind of come together. So maybe there's like the humans landing pad for the ships that act like conventional, what we know as spacecraft.
Yeah.
And maybe there's more kind of more alien landing pads. So maybe there's a one where the kind of the Corsair or Eldari pirates come in to give their trades, and maybe that landing pad is slightly different and is made up, you know, using elements of like the warp gate or something like that.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I think that kind of idea of the different pads got slightly different constructions because they're obviously designed to accommodate that race's needs for their craft. But it'd be quite cool perhaps that actually if you looked underneath some of the pads, that the pads have actually been built on top of Imperial buildings or Imperial foundations. You know, it's not that we're trying to veneer over the top of the planet beneath us, but that would be a quite cool thing that for now we're just going to build the landing pads, build the economy, build the market, and then, you know, once it's prosperous and it's working, then we can maybe go down and redo the foundations on these things. Or maybe they don't. Maybe they get, you know, paved over and you end up with an undercity that's, you know, full of who knows what creatures.
I've got in my mind a kind of a central aspect and then three spokes coming off it with, now, obviously your scope tends to be a lot larger than mine. So I'm going to go for kind of three spokes coming off it at like kind of, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock and 10 o'clock. Right. And at the end of those, there is a small landing pad for a kind of Aquila shuttle. Right.
Yep.
And then in the middle, there's a whole bunch of really cluttered market stalls and storage. You've got Munitorum shipping container things. You've got little market schools and stalls and gourds and all that nonsense, right? But also behind the pads, you've also got like fuel tanks and things like that. Now, obviously, if we are talking about Xeno, you know, things, we can't necessarily say they're all going to run on space diesel. But let's just say they do for now. And so you've got lots of big, you know, And I'm talking like Coke cans or Pringle cans. You know what I mean? Standard turn a Coke can into a fuel tank or whatever. Yep. You know, up on stilts, big Coke cans, like loads of maybe like some fuel effects, weathering power, you know, that kind of stuff, like shiny blue liquids coming out. And then next to it, like a kind of droid servitor kind of thing that drives the fuel tanks over to the ships as and when they're needed. And then just kind of dotted around, you've just got like the miscellaneous detritus or a couple of barricades. Because let's say this is, you could turn it into a war zone. It doesn't need to be a functioning market. It could just be a market that existed and that is now a war zone. So that, yes, you've got these kind of three spokes going to a central node. And I think I've designed that kind of, I've designed it vertically, but playing it horizontally so that this might not make sense, but I'll kind of put some sketches on Twitter and Instagram of the kind of thing I mean, is that you can almost build a symmetrical board going up the length of the board. But as long as you're playing it across the breadth of it, then it doesn't matter that it's it doesn't matter that all the clutter's to one side, because that just means one flank is cluttered rather than one end is cluttered.
Yeah that makes sense. Yep.
Also, I did remember when I used to play Infinity, one of the things you'd do is you'd set up all the terrain, and the kind of the natural thing to do is you'd set it up sort of perpendicular to the edges of the board. So your buildings, which were kind of squares and rectangles, the edges would align, not perpendicular, well, perpendicular and parallel, you know, at 90 degree blocks. But someone sort of taught me when to set up the terrain, to set it up diagonally so that you break up those lines of fire. And I think you could almost do that with when you're designing a table, is you design a table and because we're humans, we might design it in a fixed rectangle, but then almost just like get a big Crayola crayon and be like, crunch, right, that's now no longer a rectangle, that's a diamond. And so then it breaks up all the natural kind of lines of fire that you happen to have made, because that's how your brain works. It might just be how my brain works, but I think that's quite a cool way to kind of mess with the the kind of the angles of things, and it makes it quite interesting.
Absolutely. And if you've got all these components that are wedge shaped, because we want them to fit within the spokes, those wedges can go at different angles. You know what I mean? We can think about them as being, you know, definitions of pathways through the shanty town or through the market town. But you know, if they're all based on triangles, then there's no problem repositioning them for a different game. One of the things I quite fancied to have in the middle, maybe overlooking the market, would be to have, say, a water cast embassy, I suppose might be a way to call it. So it would be the place where if you want to do business there, you kind of have to pay your dues, pay your taxes, whatever it's going to be. But it would be the water cast that would oversee that.
Yeah, no, I like that.
So if anything, that would be like the most tower-like building you'd have there. And it doesn't need to be a big footprint. Do you know what I mean? If anything, you know, you could definitely use some of the existing Tidewall stuff.
Yeah, I think that's how you tower-fy this kind of creation. I think you could make an imperial shantytown-esque settlement, but then just incorporate elements of Tidewall stuff, put some drones, you know, use the kind of the drones as armor, kind of barricade-y type things, and just put lots of different Tau elements into it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't become a Tau city, it becomes a kind of backwater imperial world that's been taken over by the Tau.
Yes, 100%. And I think that's where we start to say, having drones that, you know, are they drones that are not necessarily for fighting, but they're for heavy lifting, you know, then they're for moving cargo about. So those drones will need a drone station that they'll power up on.
Yeah, and there's me talking about fuel servitors, whereas actually this, we are talking about a Tau thing. So would it be a fuel drone? And what happens if you introduce Tau technology to an imperial Mos Eisley, and then you've got all these kind of fuel servitors that suddenly you replace the human brain in there with a Tau AI, and you've almost got like, you know, human made fuel cells being dragged around by these floating drones.
Yeah. And for me, that's a great idea, because that's really showing that blend of the tower here, it's liberated and we're going through that process. But, you know, although they do, you know, slowly take over everything, they're not immediate oppressors. They don't, you know, kill the population. They, you know, they absorb them into the empire. So I think that's a really nice way of kind of bringing that to life.
And the Tidewall does have a drone port bit of scenery, so you could use that as well.
Yeah. The other thing I quite like the idea of, and you've mentioned it already, that, you know, maybe one of the pads could be for Kroot. And you know, that could definitely have, you know, nice bloodied wheel tracks leading up into the market, or there's like a someone hosing down part of it, whether, you know, they've got a meat market of some description.
I mean, maybe it's not even a landing pad. Maybe it's just like a generic docking station, and that's where they almost like a where you'd lead your horses, you know, like a stables, but for their kind of larger, what are the big, is it Narlocks?
Yes.
And great Narlocks. Thinking great Narlocks, yeah. So imagine you just have like a great Narloc kind of landing pad, kind of, I don't know, it's very Tatooine, isn't it? Like, just basically, like, create, like I said earlier, just create Mos Eisley, it's fine.
But I mean, that's you know, that's true in any age of any place. You know, if you were to have a Caribbean pirate island that had a mix of Spanish, French, English sailors living in one place, it's going to become cosmopolitan. I think it can't not be anything but, and I think that's the fun thing. Obviously, what you can definitely do is, let's not make it a sandy color, let's make it a different color, and that will stop it looking quite so Mos Eisley. Another idea I had is, what other things that we don't see that you...
Sorry, I'm now like dreaming up of a crew army with like Narlocks having like the equivalent of a trading caravan, but all crew.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to see a bigger crew content.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
They're very cool, and I think their nature, the way they interact with everything, is actually probably is more alien than lots of things. I've been listening to the Black Library book for the main one that introduces Blackstone Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously the Crute character in that, and the fact that, you know, they catch him chewing on the arm of somebody who was one of their comrades that got taken out by the Blackstone's defenses. It's just like, he's like, yeah, what? What's the problem? It's just like, yeah, that's our mate, dude. You know, it's not cool, you know. But suddenly then you've got somebody with an army for this table, you kind of go, well, yeah, I'm gonna have Tau forces, but yeah, I'm definitely having this crew enclave, or this crew trading, and you know, and suddenly there's things you can do with your models that maybe a shaper is a shaper and a trader. So he's got a role, okay, he's doing the same battlefield role, but maybe he just looks different, and you kind of go, well, that's cool, so why is he like that? Well, he's, you know, he's the trader, and he's got his lads with him to come and, you know, buy meat from the market because they expand their DNA pool. And with this, and I think you're probably right, talking about central marketplace and then three pads or three docking stations. But again, those docking stations, if you want to play a different sort of game, they needn't all link straight back to the center. You could actually have them zigzagged across the board, like one pad links to another pad, links to another pad that then links to the central plate. And suddenly you've got a completely different layout there. Obviously, you just got to be smart about heights, but that's, you can decide at the beginning, you know, everything needs to be 3 centimeters off the board, or, you know, 2 centimeters or whatever it is, and then it'll all match up. I think another cool thing to do is to take something that we don't normally see, and you go, okay, we've got the shanty town, we need to house some people, actually our containers are being used for trade, and that's really important. What have we got? And what if there was the hulks of rhinos from the battle before it was taken over, and there's kind of a couple of them stacked on top of each other and turned into some kind of housing?
Yes, yeah, like Ready Player One, all the shipping containers.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly like that.
So I think for me, that's where you kind of go, wow, I've never seen that. That would look cool. And it tells you, yeah, the Marines aren't here anymore. Otherwise, they would have won and they would have taken them back for repair, or, you know, they've been completely destroyed. No, they would not allow them to be used like this. So again, it's little visual cues like that, I think, which will kind of help place what's going on here.
Yeah, no, I really like that idea, that kind of stacked accommodation idea.
Yeah, and you know, so there's some complications if you've got, you know, big base models, you know, they need to make sure it's going to be a playable space. But again, I think if you just keep everything on separate bases and you don't try and make 2 foot square components full of stuff, you know, if you want to play a game which needs more space because both players want to have bigger models, bigger bases, then we just don't put so much on and we space it out a little bit. Or if we want to have a, you know, combat patrol and just crush it all into the smaller board size and, you know, have people running along gangplanks and, you know, I kind of like the idea of, in some ways, that it's a bit like old Hong Kong harbor. Perhaps there's these ships and planks and you can go from one ship to another ship. Obviously, we've got the challenge of, you know, what do those craft look like? And you know, it would be quite nice to have a Tantalus Jukari ship docked up. And again, you know, we've got some questions here. You know, is slavery okay? Does the Tau okay with that? Maybe. I'm not sure. But maybe they don't. It's not what slaves are about. Maybe the Jukari are coming here because it's a kind of sort of grey area, and people come and go because they can get some advantage to it. And the Tau are happy just to have a toehold here. But once they then, the rest of their invasion kind of catches up with this, then maybe, yeah, we'll clear them out. But right now we have a use for them. And I think for me, that kind of the gray areas, the blurry edges, the frontiers of things allow for a lot more, you know, non-regiment specific stuff, you know. And you can say, well, they would make a compromise in this case because, you know, they just need to get it done. Whereas if you go back to a core planet, there is no compromise. It's a core planet because it's, you know, absolutely everyone lives by the rules. And if you don't, then you're out, sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a really cool idea, and I think there's loads of opportunity to attach rules, objectives. You know, what could objectives be? Well, obviously, there could be things in the market. They could be limited fuel. So we're fighting over who can get the full fuel Bowser, who's going to get that. We've got a race. You can have a race to get to the Watercast embassy because you need to put your claim in first for an asteroid element that's just off the,
like, you know, a salvage thing that you found that you want to,
so suddenly there's a race to do that, and that race involves shooting the other player. Of course it does, you know. And that is that kind of frontier nature of it. And then that's not even worrying about what the street gangs might be that aren't a, you know, faction in its own self. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do they look like? Well, you know, we've got plenty of Necromunda models we can go towards. And but then is it a blend of models? And that becomes fun. One of the projects I've just done, finishing off the Hab Zone, is I've got some citizens, some sci-fi everyday folk. But for me, the idea for them to be able to use them on my table would be things like, if my Night Lords are attacking, to be able to capture one of those and obviously hideously mutilate them and leave them hanging up on a lamppost to cause terror and fear through the city. Okay, well, that's great. They're objectives, but they would actually move. You know, they would run away from known screams, or and suddenly your objective markers are moving 6 inches plus DD6, you know, 1D6 run. It's like, you know, suddenly that's a lot more fun to do, and a very different way to play the game.
Yeah, there's just so many options and so much choice out there, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, the world's so rich and the background's so rich that, you know, and we're actually, you know, trying to play between the lines here a little bit, but we can only do that because the lines are so well defined about what we know about these races and what their goals are. And I think, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, could Chaos find out about this planet and say, actually, there's rich pickings to be had here. We're going to go and overrun it. Well, maybe the Imperial forces that are there will be like, well, okay, well, we'll side with the Tau and we'll try and save ourselves. And, you know, you would have unusual alliances. So yeah, and I think it'd be great fun to build. I am going to do a sketch for it, one of my kind of one page layout sketches for it, so it'd be good fun to do. It would be obviously way too much detail to do in one sketch, but yeah, I'll do that and we can release it with the show.
Fantastic. So we were talking about a Xenos influenced Imperial world there. And the two kind of concepts that I've got that I want to explore are also Xenos related. One is probably more similar than to this one. They're probably both quite similar, really. But basically, one's orcs and one's Tyranids. So the Orc one, essentially, as a core, uses the terrain from Speed Freaks. So I've got two sets of the Speed Freaks terrain. I've also got a Mech Boys Junk Workshop or something, whatever it's called. And so that's the kind of the core of the terrain that I've got. And, you know, I'd put some of the junkyard terrain on some slightly larger MDF bases to kind of bulk out a little bit. But also back in today, there was also something called the Orc Barricade set, so I would throw those in as well. So this is just kind of, you know, like you're kind of, this is like Aegis defense, like a double Aegis defense line sized piece. I think there are five pieces of it, and it was all just a mishmash of orky bits. And to be honest, you could easily kitbash and make those larger by just smashing in a bunch of orc bits and some kind of putty and some, you know, fences.
Yep.
So you've got the Speed Freaks junk piles, you've got the Mech Boy workshop, and then you've got these barricades. And the only kind of other thing on top of that is almost like a centerpiece.
Yeah.
And I wondered, Steve, what your thoughts were on, you know, potentially repurposing an Imperial terrain piece, or potentially orcifying the Necromunda outpost or the Rohan Middle-earth village.
Oh, right. Okay.
So having that as like, you know, almost like a kind of big central line of sight blocking bit of terrain.
So let's go back to some questions then. So what type of planet is this?
I haven't got that far. I'm just thinking about the models at the moment.
Yeah. That's
so
fine.
So I guess I don't know what type of planet it is.
Okay. So there's lots of wheeled parts, junk parts. Is it kind of a scrapyard?
Yeah, that's the kind of the core of the terrain. It's like an orky scrapyard.
Right. Okay. So again, it might be something that's historical, or it's something that's just ended up becoming a scrapyard because
it's
a whole bunch of vehicles got smashed up here. The front's moved on, and you know the support units, it's making them sound a lot more organized than they are, but the mechs that all follow up have just said, right, there's loads of parts here, let's park up, put up the workshop, and let's use that, you know, insert feature here. So I guess the thing for me is, yeah, if we decide that it's an Imperial world, then that would mean they would orcify an Imperial thing. But it could also be that, you know, if this is the remains of a big battle, you know, could it be like a super heavy, the wreck of a super heavy that was in that battle, then becomes the piece that, okay, it's been gutted, the engine blew up and the engine's gone, and but then suddenly
the engine could be elsewhere.
Yeah,
the engine could be in the Mech Boy workshop.
Yes. So suddenly you've really got a good that's a really good story there, in the so you take it out, so it's been lifted out, and you can have lots of nice curly bits of metal, curly bits of plastic where it's been literally, you know, wrenched out with power claws or whatever, and that's in the workshop, and suddenly, okay, well, suddenly that's an objective in itself, isn't it? But then, you know, there's the main gun, and if you've got a turret on it, well, then the turret can turn, and that's good fun, and you can have extra turrets on there. And then the tracks, well, if it's been, you know, destroyed or damaged, then what could we use the tracks for? Well, the tracks can then become extra armor on vehicles, or they can become barricades in themselves. So we kind of deconstruct the super heavy a little bit into the table, and then in that way, yeah, you've kind of told a you know, you're telling a story that, and obviously you'd probably want a broken Lehman Russ somewhere, or a Chimera, but that sounds pretty good fun.
Yeah, I do like that idea. I'm also now looking at the gang stronghold, the Necromunda gang stronghold on Games Workshop's website, and I do feel like that is prime orcifying, you know, scenery. That
I think that's probably a much more practical piece.
That's the Dan Easy option. And Steve, your option is the Crazy Steve option.
But I think it's much easier to fight on and around and in with, you know, clear lines of fire and all that sort of stuff. So one question here might be is, if that's a stronghold, why is the stronghold here? And then why is there junk all around it?
I suppose it's the orc's base. So I'm building an orc junkyard where the orcs live, and that is the kind of orc's base.
Right. So they would just leave their junk all away, all outside, and probably inside
orcs,
as well. Yeah. Right. Okay. So
silly old orcs, what they're like.
Yeah. So I think, you know, adding panels and orc-like guns and a few spikes and rollers or whatever to that will absolutely make that great fun to do. I think the ability to, you know, take wheels and other vehicular elements and add that to the gang stronghold, so you take visual clues from the vehicles and then they go onto the terrain, so it's not just like, this isn't just a Necromunda piece of terrain right here, this is definitely orcified. And things like, you know, if you've got some sort of minigun or something on the top, maybe the minigun can be powered by a, you know, car engine, you know, typical engine, V8 engine or something. So again, it's about what the parts they're going to have around them that they're going to pull together, and that will make this stronghold peculiar, that it is this place.
Yeah, no, I quite like that. I'm going to start plotting some ideas. Sadly, the gang stronghold is out of stock on Games Workshop website.
Do you not have one?
No, that's one of the bits of terrain I don't have in my cupboard of dreams.
I'm shocked.
I know. Yeah.
My world is rocked.
Your world is rocked. I do that, Steve. So the other option I had was the Tyranids option. And so this would be much more like the Tau thing that we were describing. So rather than, I suppose the Orc one wasn't an old Imperial world, it was just an Orky junk yard. That's fine. Whereas the Tyranid one, so basically I've got a 3D printer and I've been printing out some essentially capillary tower-esque things, so big kind of Tyranid spiky things. And the best bit about the terrain that you can find online for that is that you can scale it. So I've got, imagine like a, you know, I'm sure listeners will remember the capillary tower that Forge Rod used to make. It's that kind of thing. But if you don't know what I'm referring to, imagine like a big fat scything talon, but kind of pointing up to the sky. It's kind of like that. And I've printed them ranging from kind of like, you know, little 2-inch high ones to a kind of 6-7-inch monstrosity. And I'm putting them on MDF bases printed by a company called Sarissa Precision that have cut them in the shape of the old Citadel wood template.
Nice.
So to kind of make it like this, you know, this is a good thing, a roughly good sized, medium sized terrain piece. I'm basically going to position them like they're trees on the old Citadel woods.
Yep.
And so that way the MDF provides a decent base. It also provides a fairly, you know, fairly flat structure, but it also means that the trees themselves, I can use those trees as the kind of the trees in inverted commas, the capillary towers as whatever it is I want, you know, whether I say they're spore towers and they're dense cover or you obscure or whatever.
Yeah.
I also had an idea for to get some of the so there's a company called Amira Plastic Moldings, and all these links will be in the show notes as well.
Yep.
But talks about potentially getting some craters from Amira, so they do kind of vacuum formed terrain, and you know, filling up those vacuum formed crater packs but with like, you know, pink water effect as like a biomass pool.
Yeah,
nice. That could be quite cool, couldn't it?
Yeah. I think the other thing for me with this is that if you have your wood-based elements that you can have on the table, there's no reason why you couldn't have some traditional buildings, you know, ruined Gothic buildings in each corner, and then there's like a wedge, there's a big swathe diagonally across the table of where the, you know, the Tyranid infection has gone, and it's reaching out. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be just one or the other. Can definitely.
So that's exactly what I had in mind. So that's why I said this is a bit of a combo with like the Tau, is that essentially, you know, biomass pools or craters filled with biomass pools or whatever, and Tyranid trees. There's only so much you can do with that. And that's also two very strict types of terrain. What I would be looking at is to incorporate all those kind of elements with an existing Imperial world.
Nice.
So this is where essentially I've got a bunch of Kill Team terrain of the original Kill Team that came with a bunch of the kind of new Sector Imperialis, I want to call it, all the kind of new ruins, right?
Yep.
The kind of new 8th edition style ruin. I've got a bunch of that, and that's going to be like my traditional 40k ruined Imperium table. But I've got a bunch of the old, I think it was in Sector, the old Sector Imperialis terrain, which was the kind of administratum buildings and things like that. So I've got those from, you know, the previous editions, and I thought, well, I do want to have a ruined building terrain, a ruined city fight type terrain set, and that will be the new stuff. Whereas the old stuff, what can I do with that? So I'm going to build those and cover them in the kind of Games Workshop vines.
Yeah.
And some of the old like Death World forest type tree things.
Yep.
And kind of paint them all the same color as the goo in the pools and the kind of capillary towers to make it look like this is kind of the Tyranid growth. So like the, you know, if you've ever played StarCraft by Blizzard, the kind of Zerg creep or the red weed of War of the Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. And I think, you know, immediately there's some rules that we can find or make up for being too close to the pools or, you know, standing still by the red weed. You know, if you stay there for too long, then maybe it will start creeping towards you. So yeah, there's all sorts of things that you can use to bring those elements to life. And that's not, you know, not including the fact that there would still be swarms, you know, swarms of the rippers going around just nibbling up any last biomass that they need. And then some of the creatures that do follow up as well. So I think for me, you know, there could well be some terrain specific creatures that live with the terrain that become an obstacle, you know, a moving obstacle as well. So I think that's super nice. That's super nice. So the important question is, Dan, what's the color?
Oh, I'm not sure yet. I quite like something like bright pink for the goo, but then yeah. I think I'd have to paint the kind of the weeds pink and the capillary towers pink as well. So red could work, you know, like a red and bone scheme.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I think I would just pick. I think whatever. I've got some Tyranids, you know, small Tyranid force that's kind of in box waiting to be built. So I think I'd work out whatever color I'd want to paint my Tyranids and paint the terrain the same color as that.
Yeah, because they're going to end up being generated by the same biomass. Exactly. So yeah, that makes sense.
And it also depends on what color I want to paint the terrain, the kind of imperial terrain. So currently it's all, you know, basically spray black and dry brushed heavily gray, you know, a bit generic. But I might want to try something a little bit more exciting. You know, maybe it's a Forge World, you know, maybe it's kind of Mechanicus, yeah. And it's all kind of red and stuff. So I do want it to be very different and to stand out. Because I think I want my generic city fight terrain to be sandstone, you know, Xandru dust highlighted up to kind of bone.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like, you know, black terrain just a bit dull. You know, I'd at least want to spray it gray, so it's more kind of Astrogranite or Mechanicus standard and highlighted up kind of to a lighter gray. Because I just feel like light terrain would show off the difference of the vines. You know, if you've got a bright green or red vine, a slightly lighter terrain would show that off a bit better.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, and there's no reason why there wouldn't be the creep includes like a moss layer or a dust layer that comes off from the, you know, the capillary. So if things were, you know, dusted around that area as well, that would,
oh yeah, cool. Maybe get some kind of artist chalks,
yep,
and get some really bright red. I quite like the idea of red.
It's kind of visceral and danger,
yeah,
and nasty,
although then the pools
it?
would look like blood.
Yeah, so I guess you could, the pools could be red at the edges, but maybe they go black into the middle, or do they go to a lighter,
yeah,
pink into
black,
the middle?
I'm not a fan of the black.
Or is there a scum on the surface? You know, they are pools, but perhaps there's like a crust in some areas, and that, what would that crust go? Maybe crust goes to the bony color from the NID scheme, but then there's some areas that are cracked and revealed, and you can see patches of red in there. So almost like, you know, it's like a ice on a lake that you could step on the crust but fall in and become,
yeah,
digested.
Yeah, maybe I could do like a layer of liquid effect and then paint some red veins in there and then do another clear layer over the top.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah,
like like milky white but with red kind of veins and bubbles.
Yes. Yes.
That could work.
Yeah, that could work. Then, and that's I think for me that's actually nastier than just red, isn't it? Just blood. Because,
yeah,
blood's okay, I can deal with blood, but it's like, what's the white stuff?
Ew.
Is it bile, or is it
Tyranid goo?
Yeah, yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah, I like it.
I guess there's other things as well, is that what could you put in the pools? It probably doesn't dissolve something, so is, you know, the bits of kit at the edge.
I think I'd put like Imperial Guard helmets and, yeah, around the edges and some skulls in there, and I'd like to, you know, roll up a bit of green stuff ball and cut that in half and use that as a bubble. You know, the kind of thing I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that would look great. And I think, you know, suddenly, yeah, you have got a chunky piece of impassable terrain, haven't you? Because no one's going to run over the top of that. You fly over it, of course. But
you get munched, wouldn't you? Munched by whatever lies beneath the surface.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think, and then the other thing to think about is, again, if you wanted to add a little bit more detail, is there anybody left? You know, is there anyone hiding? You know, perhaps there's a bunker, or maybe there's a drain, or there's a vault, kind of Fallout style. And one of those could be in the city, you know, and that's where some survivors have hidden for now. But they need to leave because, you know, maybe the sewers are getting full up with the red weed and they need to leave. Or you need to go and rescue them because there's a scientist that's in one of these holdout vaults and you need to go and get them. So, again, they're literally a 40 mil base. You know, they're nothing more complicated than that. But the fact that you've got all of these features, but they can be just dressings for some games, but in other games they then become the objective, or they then become the thing that you're playing for. So I think it's you know, working all that stuff out is great fun. And also, you know, you can do your initial build and then play a few games and you go, oh yeah, no, definitely we need that, and oh yeah, no, we need one of those, and that's where you end up adding another box load of terrain because of all of the nice to do's afterwards.
Yeah, and it just gives you so much, like there's so much scope. I just love it. Like there's just, you know, this isn't even armies, this is terrain. like, and let alone trying to theme terrain around your army.
Yeah, 100%. And even, like you said, what lives in these pools, well, there's plenty of parts usually on Nid Sprues. There's no reason why there couldn't be some mouth part tentacle spider thing that we don't know about yet. And, you know, suddenly that's the thing that lives in these pools. And now the Mechanicum need to capture it, because is it a new evolution? Is it a mutation? You know, we need to capture this thing so that we can take it back. So the fact that it's going to be using the same colors and have the same white sludge hanging off it, that's a really fun piece that, you know, takes an evening to do or less. And yeah, it's like the dressing or it's the center of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've covered, you know, three different sets of table ideas there. Steve will be throwing some sketches together of, yep, certainly of his, and I might try and convince him to do some of mine as well.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, there we go. We'll post those on Instagram and on Twitter once this podcast goes live. And if you're working on any terrain in particular, then let us know. We'd love to hear or even see pictures of it. So tag us on Twitter. We're at AOTI on Twitter and Instagram and even Facebook as well. You can send us a voice note if you want to tell us your terrain idea. You can go to anchor.fm/AOTI40K. And lastly, you can email us as well. So we're ashesofimperium@gmail.com. So until next time, keep calm, crusade on.
Cheers, guys.